Welcome back. In the last episode, we carved out our own private world inside Azure. We built a virtual network, we sliced it into subnets, and we planned an address space so nothing would overlap. That gave us a quiet, private neighborhood. But a neighborhood with no roads to the outside world isn't much use. So today, we open a controlled door to the internet. First, we'll talk about public IP addresses, and then about the outbound-only path that Azure now recommends, the NAT gateway. Here's why this matters before we dive in. Almost every real workload eventually needs to talk to the internet. It might pull operating system updates, call an external API, or serve traffic to your users. In Azure, that reachability is never automatic and never freeform. It's expressed through discrete billable resources, things like public IP addresses, NAT gateways, and load balancers, each with its own security posture. Pick the wrong one and you can hit a wall. This is exactly where being an administrator turns into being an architect. Let's start with the public IP address itself. The key idea here is that in Azure, a public IP address is a resource in its own right. It's not just a setting buried inside a virtual machine. You create it, you name it, you configure it, and you attach it to something or detach it from something. It lives on its own until you delete it. And while it's attached, that address is dedicated exclusively to that one resource. Nobody else shares it. A public IP does two jobs. The first is inbound. It lets something on the internet reach a resource inside Azure, like a virtual machine, an application gateway, a load balancer, or a VPN gateway. The second is outbound. It gives a resource a predictable, known address to use when it reaches out to the internet. Now here's a subtle point. A resource with no public IP can still reach outbound. Historically, Azure would quietly lend it a temporary non-dedicated address for that traffic. Hold on to that idea, because that implicit path is exactly what's being retired, and we'll come back to it. Which resources can wear a public IP? Quite a few. A virtual machine's network interface. Virtual machine scale sets, though for those you'd use public IP prefixes, a topic we'll touch on shortly. Public load balancers, virtual network gateways, NAT gateways, application gateways, Azure firewalls, bastion hosts, root servers, and API management. The attachment point differs by resource. For a virtual machine, the address binds to the network interface, the NIC. For a load balancer, gateway, or firewall, it binds to a front-end or IP configuration. One nice extra. A public IP can carry a DNS name label. You give it a friendly label, and Azure maps a name to the address in its managed DNS. So, a label of Contoso in the West US region gives you the fully qualified name, contoso.westus.cloudapp.azure.com. Just remember, each label has to be unique within its Azure region. Now here's the key decision. Every public IP has a SKU, and the SKU determines how the address is allocated, what features it supports, and what it can attach to. There are two, standard and basic. And here's the headline you must remember. On September 30th, 2025, basic SKU public IPs were retired. So for anything new, you use standard. You'll still meet basic on exams and in legacy environments, so it's worth knowing the contrast, but treat standard as the only forward-looking choice. So what's different about standard? There's a lovely little mnemonic for this. Standard is static, secure, and zone smart. Three S's. Let's unpack each. First, static. A standard public IP is always statically allocated. The address is assigned the moment you create it, and it doesn't change until you delete the resource. Basic, by contrast, could be dynamic. Second, secure. Standard is secure by default. When it's used as a front-end, it's closed to inbound traffic. You must add a network security group, an NSG, to explicitly allow traffic in. Basic was open by default. That flips the security model, and it's a common trap. Third, zone smart. Standard supports availability zones. It can be zonal or zone redundant. Basic never supported zones at all. Two more nuances worth locking in. The SKUs must match. You can't mix basic and standard between a load balancer and its public IP. A standard load balancer requires a standard public IP, full stop. And there's a niche flavor called standard V2, which right now can only be used with the standard version 2 NAT gateway, nothing else. Let me make static versus dynamic concrete, because it explains the why. With dynamic, the address isn't assigned at creation. It's handed out when the IP attaches to a running resource, and it's released when that resource stops, or the IP is removed. So a virtual machine you stop and restart might come back with a different address. With static, the address is pinned at creation and stays until you delete the IP resource. And once deleted, you can't recover it. You should reach for static whenever the address is baked into something external, like a firewall allow list, a DNS record, an IP-based security rule, or a certificate tied to an IP. There's also a related concept, the public IP prefix, that gives you a contiguous, reserved block of standard addresses. It's the recommended way to feed addresses to virtual machine scale sets, and, as we'll see, to a NAT gateway. Why a contiguous block? Because a downstream partner can then write firewall rules against a known predictable range of source addresses. Picture this scenario. You're deploying a public-facing web virtual machine sitting behind a standard load balancer. Your security team runs an on-premises firewall that has to allow list your Azure front-end address, and that address must never change. What do you choose? Well, the SKU is decided for you. It has to be standard, both because a standard load balancer demands a standard public IP, and because BASIC is retired anyway. And since standard is always static, the never change requirement is satisfied automatically. But watch the trap. Because standard is secure by default, close to inbound, you must also create and attach a network security group that explicitly allows your web traffic, say TCP on port 443. Until you add that NSG rule, nobody can reach the site. So the full answer is standard SKU, static allocation, plus an NSG allow rule. Now let's turn to outbound connectivity, which is where things get more interesting. Inbound is intuitive. A public IP lets the world reach in. Outbound is subtler, because Azure used to give it to you invisibly. If a virtual machine had no public IP and wasn't behind an outbound capable load balancer, Azure would quietly provide a default outbound access address. Automatic, but non-configurable, and you had no control over it. The moment you attach any explicit method, that implicit path switches off. Attaching a public IP to the machine does it. Joining a standard load balancer's backend pool does it. And assigning a NAT gateway to the subnet does it. Here's the direction of travel, and it's important. As of March 31, 2026, new virtual networks default to private subnets, and that default outbound access is no longer provided. You must configure an explicit outbound method, and NAT gateway is the recommended one. If you don't, your virtual machines can't even do Windows update or Windows activation. This is why NAT gateway went from nice to have to the default recommendation. So what is Azure NAT gateway? It's a fully managed, highly resilient network address translation service. You attach it to a subnet, and every instance in that subnet can reach the internet outbound while staying completely private. No individual machine needs a public IP. And here's the crucial property. It is outbound only. ANAT gateway never permits unsolicited inbound connections. Only response packets, replies to a flow the machine itself started, are allowed back in. That one-way nature makes it perfect for back-end tiers, batch workers, anything that should call out but never be reachable from the internet. How does it actually work? It performs source network address translation, which we say is SNAT. It rewrites the private source address and port of each outbound flow to one of its static public addresses and a port. Its standout feature is that it allocates those SNAT ports dynamically, on demand, which lets it scale outbound connectivity automatically and dodge the classic failure mode of the older methods, port exhaustion. We'll come back to that. Let me paint the two directions clearly. Outbound traffic flows from your virtual machines to the NAT gateway, to its public IP, and out to the internet. Inbound traffic to a hosted service arrives on a completely different path, through a public IP, on a load balancer's front end. The NAT gateway plays no part in inbound at all. Keep those two roads separate in your mind. NAT gateway comes in two flavors, standard and standard version 2. Standard is zonal, meaning it lives in a single availability zone, and it delivers up to 50 gigabits per second. Standard V2 is zone redundant, spanning all zones in the region, delivers up to 100 gigabits per second, supports both IPv4 and IPv6, and adds flow logs. Each demands a matching public IP SKU, and you can attach up to 16 public addresses. Two facts to lock in. You can't upgrade standard to standard version 2. You replace the resource instead. And both share the same core behavior, dynamic SNAT ports, secure outbound, and no routing configuration required. Why do administrators love it? Setup is simple. Attach it to a subnet and a public IP, and outbound just works, with no user-defined routes or route tables to manage. It's great for a zero-trust posture, since private instances need no public IP, and you can build destination firewall rules on a predictable set of addresses. It's resilient, distributed and managed with multiple fault domains, not depending on any single machine. And it scales. All subnets in a virtual network can share a single NAT gateway, and you can add addresses for more SNAT capacity. It handles TCP, UDP and ICMP, and it fits neatly into hub and spoke designs. Just remember a few limits. One NAT gateway can't span multiple virtual networks, you can't attach 2-to-1 subnet, and you can't deploy one in a gateway subnet. Picture this. A subnet holds 30 back-end worker machines. They must call external payment and update APIs, but they must never be reachable from the internet. And the payment provider only accepts traffic from a known contiguous set of source addresses. How do you design the outbound? Attach an Azure NAT gateway to the worker's subnet. It's outbound only, so the machines need no public IP and stay fully private, which satisfies the never-reachable rule. To meet the provider's fixed address requirement, associate the NAT gateway with a public IP prefix, a contiguous block, rather than scattered individual addresses. The provider can then allow list that predictable range. Because the gateway shares dynamic SNAT ports across the subnet, all 30 machines scale their outbound flows with no manual sizing. Choose standard V2 if you want zone redundancy, IPv6, or flow logs, otherwise standard, and match the public IP SKU to whichever you pick. Now, what happens when several outbound methods are configured on one subnet? Azure resolves it with a strict precedence for new connections. Existing flows on other methods aren't dropped. At the top sits a user-defined route sending traffic to a virtual appliance or a virtual network gateway. Below that, the NAT gateway. Then an instance-level public IP on the machine. Then load balancer outbound rules. And at the bottom, the default system route to the internet. So NAT gateway beats instance public IPs, load balancer rules, and Azure firewall, unless a user-defined route sends the default route 0.0.0.0.0/0 to an appliance or gateway, which overrides even NAT. There's a mnemonic for this. Routes rule, NAT next. A user-defined route always wins. If there's no overriding route, NAT is the next thing Azure reaches for. And notice NAT gateway itself needs no route table. The subnet's built-in default route already points at the internet, and NAT simply handles the source-side translation on that path. Let's finish the technical picture with SNAT port exhaustion. Every outbound TCP connection to a unique destination address and port consumes a SNAT port on the source public address. With the older methods, default outbound and load balancer outbound rules, that pool of ports was fixed and pre-allocated. Under many concurrent connections, it could run out. When it does, new outbound connections fail or time out intermittently, while the existing ones keep working fine. That's the telltale signature of exhaustion. NAT gateway mitigates this by allocating ports dynamically, on demand, across all its public addresses, so it doesn't hit the same limits. Picture this last scenario. A fleet of machines behind a standard load balancer with outbound rules starts throwing intermittent connection timed out errors when calling a single external API under load. Long-lived connections are fine. It's the new ones that fail, and only at peak. What's going on? Those symptoms. New connections failing under heavy concurrency to the same destination while established flows keep working are the classic sign of SNAT port exhaustion. The load balancer's outbound rules draw from a finite pre-allocated port pool, and hammering one destination drains it. The recommended architectural fix is to move outbound to an Azure NAT gateway on the subnet. It allocates ports dynamically and doesn't share those exhaustion limits. And by precedence, it quietly takes over new connections without dropping the existing ones. For extra headroom, attach a public IP prefix, since more addresses mean more ports. Let's do a quick recap before we move on. A public IP is a standalone resource that enables inbound reach and predictable outbound. Basic is retired, so use standard, which is always static, secure by default, meaning it needs an NSG to allow inbound, and zone capable. Default outbound access is going away, so configure an explicit method. And the NAT gateway is your recommended outbound-only, fully managed translation service, with no routing config, shareable across all subnets in a virtual network, dynamic ports that avoid exhaustion. Remember the precedents, roots rule NAT next. So we've now opened a controlled door to the internet, both inbound with public IPs and outbound with the NAT gateway. Next time, in episode 3, we connect virtual networks to each other with peering, linking them over the Microsoft backbone, and we'll confront why peering is non-transitive, which turns out to be the key to hub and spoke design. See you there.